Utah's Attorney General calls for an investigation into the bribery allegations brought against him. KUER's Bob Nelson goes shrimping on the Great Salt Lake. And Utah schools see the lowest participation in the free breakfast program in the nation. You're listening to the KUER News Pod for Wednesday, January 16th. I'm Brian Grimmett. Utah Attorney General John Swallow is asking the U.S. Attorney for Utah for a full investigation into allegations that he schemed to bribe a congressman. In a letter to the U.S. Attorney for Utah, Swallow denies all of the allegations brought against him by St. George businessman Jeremy Johnson. He also says he expects no special treatment and will give his full cooperation. The Office of the U.S. Attorney for Utah has confirmed they received the letter and that a response was sent back, but they would not say if they will be doing an investigation. In an interview with KUER, Swallow continued to deny the allegations, but also defended his interaction with Johnson, saying he was just doing his job. He says his office is also making changes to make sure an incident like this doesn't happen again.
We still have to be open to the public. We still are a state elected by the people to help people, but I've decided I will not be meeting alone with people who have any kind of challenges.
Swallow also defended his work on an outside consulting job he did while serving as Deputy Attorney General. He says nothing he did was illegal, but that he will not be doing any outside consulting work while he is serving as Attorney General. He refused to say whether or not he believes it should be legal. The ecosystem of the Great Salt Lake includes a unique variety of brine shrimp species that has spawned a rare public-private partnership between the Utah Department of Natural Resources and more than a dozen businesses. KUER's Bob Nelson went out to take a look.
So Bob, we got a map here of the lake, and we're starting off right here off of Antelope Island.
As we prepare to leave the Antelope Island Marina, aquatics biologist Phil Brown laid out the basic plan for the day. I was to spend with John Luft, the program manager of Great Salt Lake Ecosystem, and another aquatics biologist, Jim Van Leeuwen. This operation is run within the Division of Wildlife Resources. Great Salt Lake brine shrimp eggs, known as cysts, are what this program is all about. There are as many as 17 shrimping companies quietly collecting millions of pounds of what they call raw harvest from the lake every week. This small team tells the industry when the harvest ends for the year by closely monitoring the biology of the lake. They collect regular data from the water, including the clarity of the lake, microbe types and amounts, the salinity of the water, and a long list of other factors. But the most important data they gather is the average level of cysts per liter. John Luft says that level directly affects not only the brine shrimp industry, but half of the world's population of a duck known as the eared grebe and millions of other birds on the lake.
One of the major issues that we like to ensure that there's enough shrimp here for the birds. That's one thing. But we also want to maintain a sustainable population of shrimp that can be harvested. So there's an economic component there.
Luft says research has shown there's an ideal threshold of cysts per liter to reach each winter, and that's where the ecosystem relies on industry.
You also run the risk of not harvesting enough shrimp, which seems counterintuitive, but the best thing to do is to get as close to that threshold as possible.
They test this by pulling a metered net straight up from the bottom in 17 predetermined spots. Gary Belovsky is a biologist at the University of Notre Dame who specializes in conservation and population biology. He developed the original formulas to determine that threshold. The DWR first considered regulating the industry in 1994, and Belovsky was known at that time for his lab work with the species known as Artemia franciscana. He says the division needed his knowledge to help them transition to regulation on the lake.
That's one of the most interesting things is when the Utah Division of Wildlife Resources got started with me in 1994, I did a literature search to see what we knew about the brine shrimp in the Great Salt Lake, and there was very, very little data.
Belovsky was on a hunting trip in Montana when he got the phone call from the division manager asking questions for which there were no answers. But spending hours in his truck that day on a cell phone with a pencil and scrap papers, he calculated a cysts per liter number, which to this day is still in use.
It turns out that the best value for harvesting would be at about 23.5, and we lucked out. There was a great deal of luck there on that first estimate, and we were at 21 at that time.
Back at the lake, ecosystem manager John Luft says everything he and the brine shrimp companies do on the lake revolves around 21 cysts per liter.
When I, you know, make management decisions to close the season or call a timeout, it's based on that information.
That data is also published weekly during the shrimping season on the DWR website. The processed and packaged eggs sell for up to $60 a pound and are marketed to aquarium suppliers, fisheries, and shrimp and prawn farms around the world. One heaping tablespoon contains about 200,000 eggs. Hatchlings called nauplii are the baby food for what eventually becomes shrimp cocktail or salmon fillet. The 17 companies harvesting the eggs are all members of a cooperative called Great Salt Lake Artemia, with only one exception. Don Leonard is the president of the Utah Artemia Association and a chairman of the cooperative. He says harvesting is complex and expensive. The first step is to locate from the air the clusters where eggs likely are gathered in what is called a streak.
And we'll send the boats to that area, and hopefully they can harvest them and capture them before they sink in the water column again. It's rigorous work, and fatigue alone would pretty much keep people from that kind of a regime.
Leonard says the industry is very fortunate that the Great Salt Lake is the only meaningful source of brine shrimp eggs in the Western Hemisphere.
There are a number of salty bodies of water in China and Russia, some of them fairly large, that do produce significant quantities of brine shrimp and brine shrimp eggs. But as far as in our corner of the world, the Great Salt Lake is the one and only.
It's a fact that adds uniqueness to the Great Salt Lake brine shrimp, both as a natural resource and a marketable product. Biologist Gary Bolovsky says the management system seems to be proving its viability over time.
Even though at times there can be tension, it's been a good example of research working with state agencies and industry being involved. And so it's been a team effort of all the parties involved in coming to figuring out and continuing to improve on managing the lake.
The season so far this year isn't quite meeting expectations. John Loft of the DWR says the raw harvest numbers are regularly hitting record levels, exceeding 25 million pounds in a week. But he says tests over the past 2 weeks indicate the season will be over in less than a month, since the cysts per liter numbers are diving quickly. Don Leonard of the cooperative says this record raw harvest has been a good thing, but is costing more this year to bring in. He's also concerned about the quality or yield of his harvest, and that so far has been below average. Bob Nelson, KUER News.
Utah has the fewest number of eligible schoolchildren eating free and reduced-price breakfast each day. According to a new national report released today, Utah served about 34 low-income children breakfast for every 100 that received free or reduced-priced lunch during the 2011-2012 school year. One advocate says there are easy ways to bring participation rates up. KUER's Whitney Evans reports.
The school breakfast scorecard, released annually by the Food Research and Action Center, shows Utah is dead last in breakfast program participation, while participation nationally is on the rise. Gina Cornea is the executive director of Utahns Against Hunger. She says data shows when schools offer breakfast between when school starts and recess begins, more kids will eat. But most Utah schools provide breakfast almost an hour before the bell rings.
I think it's a matter of us as a state making that a priority, that not only are our schools well-funded, but that we make sure that kids start the day ready to learn.
The federal government fully reimburses schools that provide free or reduced-price breakfast to students. Luann Elliott is director of child nutrition programs for the Utah State Office of Education. She says it's still the philosophy of many local school districts that kids should eat breakfast at home.
I think most of us agree with that philosophy, but the truth is many kids don't eat breakfast at home. So ignoring that doesn't serve us well.
Elliott says the state is providing training on breakfast opportunities at the next conference for school food authorities this month. Whitney Evans, KUER News.
Jared and Christy Fry have raised a two-year-old girl, Talea, since she was born. but they're under a court order to give Talia back to her biological father, who went to court saying he never had a chance to challenge her adoption. The Utah Supreme Court has now delayed the handover based on a petition for emergency release from the Fries. A hearing that had been set for today has been canceled, but there's no word yet on when it might be rescheduled. The Utah Department of Alcoholic Beverage Control says it will no longer be issuing citations to restaurants who serve drinks to customers before they've ordered a meal. Restaurant licenses require liquor to be served with food, but a DABC official now says it's okay to bring them while customers are still looking at the menu, as long as they eventually order something. The Salt Lake Tribune reports the DABC's new chief of compliance had ordered the change to a stricter interpretation in December. The Sutherland Institute says the state of Utah shouldn't be promoting the Sundance Film Festival, which begins this weekend. The conservative think tank says the state shouldn't back a festival that features films about porn stars and women having affairs with one another's adult sons. He's referring to Lovelace and Two Mothers, a pair of films starring Hollywood actresses. Utah expects to spend $300,000 supporting the festival again this year. The festival generated an estimated $80.3 million in economic impact for the state last year. The city of Saratoga Springs have adjusted its boundaries with Lehigh to accommodate a parcel of land that was within the Lehigh city limits but owned by Saratoga Springs. It's next to the Pioneer Crossing roadway. Salt Lake Tribune reports the city of Lehigh has also expressed willingness to change the lines. Personal bankruptcy filings were down in Utah last year, the first time they've dropped since 2005. The U.S. Bankruptcy Court for Utah says 12% fewer claims were filed in 2012. Nationwide, they're down 14%. A man who accidentally shot his brother was sentenced to 30 days in jail. Eric Charlton has also been ordered to give talks at schools about the danger of mixing alcohol and firearms. Charlton's friends and family had asked the court for a lenient sentence. 18-year-old Cameron Charlton died after he was shot at a campground near Yuba Lake. A mostly intact first edition of the Book of Mormon, stolen from a bookstore in Mesa, Arizona, has been returned to the store owner. The alleged thief has pleaded guilty in the case, and the book is no longer needed as evidence. Helen Schley discovered the book was missing in May. J. Michael Linford pleaded guilty in the case and agreed to pay restitution to a rare book dealer in Dallas who'd bought it, not knowing it was stolen. And finally, more women in Utah are earning college degrees, but there's still a gap between men and women. 47% of all bachelor's degrees are given to women. That's the lowest percentage of all 50 states. The Utah Women in Education Initiative released the data yesterday. Governor Gary Herbert has set a goal to have 66% of Utah residents 25 to 64 years old with at least a one-year post-high school degree or certificate by 2020. The current level is 43%. And that is your KUER News Pod for Wednesday, January 16th. For the latest news and updates from around the state, check out our new free smartphone app that you can download for your iPhone or Android device. Until next time, I'm Brian Grimmett.